The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Why don't I see us live? Okay, we are live. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I'm enjoying Clamato and Ice. Delicious Clamato. This is the works with some spice, with some more sodium, pepper. New Guy Prime is on the regular chat. Today we will start the Ask Me Anything by speaking with Dinoco. So I'm sliding Dinoco in right now. Today we are starting the Ask Me Anything with Dinoco, who contacted me and he wanted to speak with me about genes. I have no idea what he wants to ask about, but I thought it's better to have the conversation public so that other people can benefit from it. Dinoco, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing great. So what were your questions about genetics?
Well, it's more so about how genes correlate to intelligence. So I watched a previous debate, I forget which one, I think it was your debate with Destiny, where you brought up that genes are roughly 80% responsible for intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how do you explain, I'm sure you've heard of the Flynn effect, right?
Yes.
what causes that? Because if it's 80% genetic, I would imagine there wouldn't be a whole lot of variety between intelligence and different groups, whether or not they're industrialized or not.
Yes. So the Flynn effect is the fact that the IQ has been measured to increase between the 1920s, let's say, and the 1980s. And in the 1980s, there was a stabilization of the Flynn effect, so IQ stopped going up, and arguably it has been going down since. So we kind of peaked. Of course, the Flynn effect is unsustainable forever, by definition, just because of the laws of physics. You can't always get more intelligent. So it seems that we reached the peak of the Flynn effect in the 1980s, and now we're going down.
People born in the 80s or people in the 80s?
Okay. People measuring the IQ in the 80s and measuring the IQ in kind of a young adult. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Sorry. How much has our IQ dropped from the 80s, I guess?
Well, the Flynn effect, if I remember correctly, this is far in my mind, but the whole Flynn effect from 1920 to 1980 is in the range of less than 15 IQ points, I think. And the drop, if I remember correctly, the Edward Dutton article, maybe it's in the range of 5 IQ points drop. So we haven't fully reversed it.
I guess I might be looking at a different source here. The one I'm looking at, it's from Wikipedia, but I'll just go with it.
Okay.
I have something better. In America, as it seems, from like 1920 to I think that's 2013, roughly. It seems like it increased by over 30. That's what it's telling me.
30 seems high. Because the Flynn effect, here I have the first paragraph of Wikipedia. Using a sample of test takers is set to 15 or 16 IQ points. And their standard deviation is set to 15 or 16 IQ points. So that would be two standard deviation that you mentioned. I don't know. It's possible. As I said, I only had a rough remembering of it around 15. But okay, suppose I grant that it's 30. So you ask then, how is it possible without the genes being changed? First, I think that what we measure in the Flynn effect is not crystallized adult IQ. I believe that we are basically pushing young people to reach higher IQ peaks of their life faster. And so imagine that the peak of the IQ is around 25 years old. And imagine we test people at 20 years old. But imagine that all of the educational things that we do make them reach their peak IQ earlier in life. I believe that part of the Flynn effect is a mismeasurement based on the assumption that age is stable, when in fact what we're doing is we're coaching people to become, to reach their crystallized adult intelligence earlier in life by over-educating them. That's the first thing. I don't know what share of the Flynn effect can be explained by it, but that would be a first counter to the idea that there's a discrepancy between genes causing intelligence and the Flynn effect.
So at what age do we reach our peak IQ, I guess, generally?
That's subject to lots of variation, but if you look at a general cognitive decline curve, you'll see that it's somewhere between 22 and maybe 35.
Okay.
So that's a first thing. Yeah. Secondly, there are demographic dynamics that are happening over a period of 80, 100 years that makes it so that the average American in 1980 is not the average American in 1920. And just because of this, You are not really in a test environment where you can confirm I have as many descendants of this guy in 1980 as I have descendants of this other guy. So because there's a natural selection game happening between the 1920s and 1980, I believe that there's a part of the Flynn effect that's actually a struggle for natural selection still happening. And perhaps it is possible that there was a small wave of increased selection between 1920 and 1980. For example, more intelligent people could have been selected out of the system that sent people to war, or perhaps less intelligent people may have been more likely to die in war. Things like this make it so that we are in an evolutionary situation that does involve genes, and that does involve a change of the genetic frequencies in the human population that we really can't, or we haven't at least fully examined yet. So we don't know how much of the Flynn effect is due to a small wave of evolutionary pressure that may have shown around World War II or in the coming years after. We don't know.
Well, if we were talking about Germany, I'd agree with that, because I think Germans had like millions of deaths in World War II. But I think the death count for Americans in World War II is pretty small. So I don't know how much of an effect it would have on the gene pool. I think it'd be pretty
minimal. The war itself, but then imagine all of the other associated things like immigration. Are you more likely to have stayed in Europe after World War II, if you're high IQ versus if you're low IQ? Are you more likely to have moved to, a safe harbor place with low taxes if you're rich and high IQ in the 50s or in the 60s or in the 70s? The sum of all these things that we don't know leads me to tell you that's another point. On top of the fact that we may be misrecording people's age, basically, by making people mature earlier, we are also not recording the genetic flows in and out of America as we do these tests.
When you say genetic flows in and out, you mean immigration and emigration, right?
Immigration, immigration and death, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, from what I've generally seen, you, and I guess stats sort of back this up, like people from Africa have lower IQs than people from Europe or Asia, I guess, or even America. Do you think that is purely genetic? Like how much of that can be accounted for, let's say, educational attainment and stuff like that, and how much of it can be accounted for by genetics?
Well, my philosophy is that this dichotomy, nature-nurture, or genetics, not genetics, is a false dichotomy. I reject it. The idea of percentages does not apply to things that are inherently, you know, life is a set of genes. For sure, all of your intelligence is genetic, because for sure you would be a squirrel if you had the genes of a squirrel. And so the way I present it is anything that differentiates you from the squirrel is genetic, for sure. And then, yes, it can involve aspects of the environment, but the question of the aspects of the environment is not properly framed when you ask about percentage cause. Because there's no weighting that exists between a genetic cause and a percentage cause. Suppose I knew everything about what makes someone intelligent. I know that they are intelligent because they ate some apples when they were young, so they had enough glucose in their blood so they could produce an effective brain. I know that they had to eat butter because butter was needed to create the dendrites of fat in their brain that allows neural connectivity. And they have gene A, B, C, which were also necessary to make them intelligent. Because let's say it was creating proper connections in their brain. Now, what do I say about the percentage here? Is it because they ate an apple that's 33% of the environment? Is it because they ate some butter that's 33% of the environment? And does each gene count for another 33? Or do they count for 20 each? Percentages make no sense when you talk about multiple chains of causality that involve multiple sub-causes, each of which were necessary for the outcome. The way I present this idea often is in a room. You're in a room, there's a button in front of you. The button leads you to deprive the room of oxygen. Suppose I press the button. Am I 100% responsible for your death? Or is the fact that there was no oxygen, the lack of oxygen in the room, is responsible for your death? Am I responsible at 50% or am I 100%? See, the idea of percentages makes no sense when we talk about causes, necessary causes. I had to press the button for you to die, and there had to be a mechanism, and there had to be a lack of oxygen, all of which are a chain of causes that lead to you dying. The same is true of intelligence. There's a chain of causes, multiple causal routes, all of which involve genes at some point, because you would have a squirrel brain if it wasn't of the genetic difference. So everything is genetic, and then genes, yes, do interact with the environment. The question of the environment ultimately is very simple. It's, if I was to take a black person and I was to try my best to create the best environment for them to grow into a high IQ, how much of it could I do despite their genes? And that question, we've kind of resolved it with these adoption studies, transracial adoption studies. And the answer that comes out is you can basically increase on average, but by just having them in a white family, you can increase a black IQ by maybe 3 to 5 points. That's it.
And my data may be wrong here, but I think on average they're like, what, 10 lower? I don't know.
Yeah, they're about 10 to 15 lower.
Okay. So I guess when it comes to policy, I've heard you talk a lot about how the role of genetics and intelligence and everything, and as you said, they're inseparable from environment, so it's hard to pin a percentage on the environment versus the genes. In fact, it's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this translate to policy? Given this information, what would you want to do with it?
The first thing we have to do on policy is understand, as Charles Murray phrases it very well, we are pursuing an unachievable goal if we want nationwide standards that are equal for everyone. So it's actually torture and abuse what we do when we say that there's this scholar standard and white people should meet it and black people should meet it. We are actually abusing the blacks by doing this. So the first thing is adjust expectations. The second thing is realize that by adjusting expectations, we don't want to deprive the higher threshold for the people who can reach higher levels of geniuses and higher levels of IQ. So, for example, let us be careful at not lowering the standards for everyone so that the blacks can pass it in a way that punishes the whites and that destroys the necessary scholarly meritocracy that leads whites to achieve higher results. So those are very important. Those are the two important pillars. Let us not have false expectations with reality, but let us also not have lowered standards that punish everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, in another debate, you mentioned, I think it was your debate with another debate with Destiny and some other person, I forgot. You mentioned a concept called voluntary eugenics. And you said you're a proponent of that, or has your position changed?
I mean, I don't remember the context in which I would have used these words. Do you remember what I was talking about and what would voluntary eugenics be?
Well, that's what I was asking because it wasn't really clear. I think it was just the way I understood it is it's a form of eugenics where the state doesn't enforce it necessarily.
Yeah, that would be my guess. So basically what it means is don't violently eliminate or interfere with the reproduction of the people you don't want in society. However, have a consciousness that everything you do has impacts onto eugenics and has impacts into the direction that the population takes. And most importantly, allow people to freely associate with the genes they want to see helped toward greater representation in society. In other words, allow the creation of locations where white people are together and they don't have to be punished by the other genes that are around that are for increased violence or that they don't want in their society. So by allowing voluntary separation of people, you can allow the forming of different bubbles in society of genes that otherwise wouldn't survive together, because the genes for low violence, high intelligence, high societal care, high conscientiousness, those genes have no chance in a world headed by gangs and violence and where you're going to end up being killed because you walked on the wrong side of the road or you looked at someone and they interpreted it aggressively. So to let those genes exist, let us voluntarily separate in our own places and let us and the people who farm genes of violence among their communities have to pay the price for it. We don't.
Okay. I guess for an example, would you agree that in the early 20th century, Italian Americans they committed way more crime on average than the typical English descendant or whatever?
I've actually never seen this data, but I wouldn't deny it. Sure, I can accept it for the purpose of discussion.
Okay. Now, as far as Italian-American crime goes, it's not really an issue anymore. It seems to have sort of resolved itself. You had a peak where you had the mafia and everything, organized crime, sort of like gangs, but a little bit different. And then it seems to have resolved itself naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that can happen when it comes to like black gangs in America? Do you think that's a problem that can resolve itself naturally?
No, or I don't think so.
Government intervention.
I don't think so, because the ensemble of places in the world where black people have taken over have become shitholes. South Africa, Haiti. I believe that there is something too fundamentally ingrained in the genetics that the equilibrium for nonviolence can never be reached, that it's just too far to reach. Perhaps in the case of Italians, they're more at the border of it, precisely because their race is more European. But I have absolutely no hope that it can be done for the Africans.
Okay. Given that, why advocate for a voluntary eugenic system? Wouldn't you be better off forcing it forcing it within the borders of your state, I guess.
Forcing it has a cost. It has a physical cost, it has a military cost, and it has a moral cost. The reason I'm advocating for voluntary separation is that you don't make yourself too much of an enemy. The thing is, if we start killing people and just, if we're talking about genocide and eliminating people, then you have legitimate enemies that are rising, and they will hate you, and they will fight back. If we're talking about just letting people live with who they want to live, that's free association, and that could be feasible with much less military effort and human cost to it.
Don't we already have that in a way? Like you don't have to hang out with black people.
Well, we don't completely have that. Everywhere in the U.S., you are always at risk that a black family will buy the house beside yours. And you're always at risk that your daughter will race mix with a black person. And you're always at risk that across 20 years, 50 years, your neighborhood becomes slowly black. So because we have these laws for integration, forced busing, forced public school sharing among the races, a ban on various forms of segregationism. We don't have free association in the U.S. It's been taken from us in the 1960s.
Well, to give an example, go back to the daughter example, isn't that an example of free association? I mean, she doesn't have to marry a black person. She doesn't have to have a kid with them.
It's free association at the individual level, but at the societal level, you can have a philosophy where I want my family to only be exposed to nonviolent families. I don't even want it to be a choice for my children to be encountering, say, street drugs or gangs or prostitution lifestyles. And the only way you can truly deprive someone from the next generation of contact with those dark worlds is by segregation, full segregation.
Full segregation among racial lines, right?
Yeah, voluntary self-segregation of the races, where white people say, look, you do whatever you want in those locations, but here we are building a state or a city for ourselves, and you're not welcome.
It's not enforced by policy necessarily, but I'm pretty sure the U.S. has a lot of towns that are just white people.
Oh yeah, there's people who reach close to it, but legally they couldn't enforce it explicitly, and that's a problem.
Yeah, but even solving for that, even towns that are made up of just white people, they have huge issues with like meth addiction rates, poverty, all that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah,
like it doesn't.
I'm not saying that whites are perfect. I'm just saying they are better among themselves than they are with even more imperfect races.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but do you have like an example of like a homogenous white society that did super, super well. And then, like,
is that a joke? I mean, let's start.
The U.S. is the number one world power, and that's a fairly mixed country.
United States, early United States, was a white ethno state, essentially a state where white people had secured the full power. So yes, early United States,
it wasn't necessarily a white ethno state; it was an Anglo-Saxon ethno state.
Exactly,
I think that's what Benjamin Franklin
Which is also the broader category of a white ethno state: England, France, Germany, Switzerland, Sweden.
Well, no, like England. I'm pretty sure they thought very lowly of Germans.
That is irrelevant to your question. Your question was a very, very clear question about, is there any white society that has ever been successful? I mean, that's why I'm asking if it's a joke or what you,
or,
your game.
Sorry, I
you're
probably
trying
phrased
to play
it wrong.
A game here.
I probably phrased it wrong, because I guess what I was asking is, are there any societies that were better off expelling different races from their society or segregating themselves from different races?
Absolutely. Everything I just named. England, America. America did the expelling not physically, but politically at first. America, England, France,
well,
Germany,
clear,
Switzerland,
Sweden. The states that enforced segregation were worse off economically than the ones that didn't. That's just a fact.
They were what? Sorry?
Worse off. Economically, especially.
I don't care. You didn't ask, were they the absolute best? You asked, were they decent society that were decently successful? They were.
But societies that had mixed races, or I guess states that did, were better off. I guess that's just sort of where the confusion is coming from. Because I'd imagine
down the line, you are poorly accounting, because you're saying better off. You're measuring something like GDP or whatever measure you have in your mind. I don't care about this. Down the line, you're not accounting for all of the murders. You're not accounting for all of the rapes that diversity causes. If you were to sum the sum of all human suffering caused by diversity, it would be a mountain of rape and murder that you can't possibly conceive of, that cannot be measured in GDP, okay? So do the accounting properly, and you'll see that you have much more peaceful, much more livable society, much more desirable society in homogeneous white societies, which is why those are the only societies that attract such net positive migration for all of their existence. It's because they are the only place where people really want to live and know that their life will be improved by it.
Would you consider Canada, historically speaking, a white society?
Absolutely. I would put Canada on this list, and until the 70s, 80s, 90s, which it became an immigration state, basically an outpost of India. But before that, absolutely, Canada was a great country.
But even within that white state, you still had a huge separation between Franco-Canadians and Anglo-Canadians.
Absolutely.
Right? There's a lot of animosity there.
Nothing better for the white race than internal disagreements, because the white race elevates itself by internal competition, even internal killing, in organized war, where white people, well-dressed white people, were lining up against each other and just shooting each other in the face.
Okay. If we're talking about... I'm assuming that was sort of like tongue-in-cheek there.
No, I mean, I think of it that way. The white race had basically tournaments of killing themselves. I mean, think about it from an African perspective, how foreign that is. We were dressed all clean up, lining up with our big hats with fur, and just slowly reloading our guns and poof, killing one line of white people against another until there was no line left. And whoever was left standing won. I mean, that is that is a level of organization, of self-selection, that is quite radical. And when you start thinking about the level of cognitive organization that you need to participate to such an organized tournament of killing, you realize what differentiates us from all the other races.
There are a few exceptions, but I can grant that. Like I think the Japanese and the Chinese, they had their...
Yeah, they reached their own peak in their own way, indeed.
Yeah. Do you think Africa will ever reach that?
No.
Fair enough. I'm just trying to reconcile it, because it just seems... Because if white people do outperform black people, I don't see any... It seems like the white people would benefit from being in a society with black people because they exploit them, right?
Can you repeat? You're saying black people would benefit from being in a black people
society?
White
people would benefit from being in a mixed society because they would...
Oh, absolutely not.
The other races.
Okay, you're making the case, you're trying to make the case that we would dominate them and make use of them?
Yeah.
But they're unusable.
Are they?
They're unusable like a toxic waste. Like, actually, biohazard is the proper categorization for what we're faced with here. Like, you recognize that... Let's say a big barrel of a biohazard substance. You recognize that there is a point at which it has negative value, right? Just having it around, just having the responsibility of handling its dangerous nature. You couldn't... There's a point at which you would ask me money to take my barrel of biohazard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I see most peoples on this earth as biohazards.
Most people, so like
the non-whites, the further away you get from Western European, to and very close, like the further away you get to me, the more of a biohazard you are to my existence.
I guess to tie it back to IQ, I'm pretty sure the average IQ in China is like 110. That might be dubious, because
mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I would trust those. I don't know if those are independent results, if those are self-reported, but
yeah.
Could a Chinese person not make the case that the Europeans are a barbaric people?
Oh, they could.
War with each other?
I have no intention under voluntary eugenics, as we've discussed it. I have no intention to force the Chinese to live among us or force the Chinese to accept us in China. I think Chinese society is fine. They are a well-organized, higher IQ society, and they should develop their own branch. They're not my people. We differ in major ways, some of it cognitive. But they are their own form of life, and I respect them, and they should keep existing in China.
Okay. I mean, I think there's an interesting way we can go about this. Like if you truly believe that white societies will outperform mixed societies in the long run, would it not make sense to enact a policy where European countries remain white, like almost in entirety, and then I guess we designate, I guess is already sort of the thing, the US is sort of like the great experiment of it, to see how...
Well, would I sacrifice the US for a white Europe? It's kind of asking the question in a reverse order, because Europe to me is already dead. So to me, the US is the last hope, and subsections of the US to me is the last hope for the white race. And of course, Canada and some northern regions in the Arctic. Your strategy, your plan, your deal is impossible to implement. There's no mechanism by which I can tell all of the Arab immigrants in Europe, get out now, We're going to leave you America, but we're taking back Europe. There is just no mechanism by which this happens, except a huge racial war, like a racial civil war in Europe. I don't think that's happening soon.
Yeah, true. I would argue America's already quite mixed, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is quite mixed, but if you think of America as potentially breakaway states, potentially breaking away from America, you can see a core of the Central America, Central North America, could remain white, could be a majorly white society.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned poison. That's a metaphor. I'm just like, what's the mechanism? How does the poison present itself in society?
Well, let's say, I don't know the exact number, but let's say that about 1 in 3 black male will end up killing someone in their life. Okay, whether you agree with the number, maybe it's 1 out of 4, maybe it's 1 out of 5. But there is a number where it's much higher than white people. And to the point where if you're a woman, if you're a black woman, and you have 3 male children, or let's say you have 6 children and 3 of them are male, you know you have caused a murder to happen in the next generation that wouldn't have happened otherwise. That is what I mean by biohazard-like properties. It's like, how do we deal with this? The fact that ultimately a woman in one generation is responsible for a murder 30 years down the line, and she'll never be punished for it. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with the fact that there are massive consequences on the real estate value just because that woman has made more babies in your neighborhood than she did in some other neighborhood? How do we recollect that $100,000 value that you lost on your house just because black people were living around it?
Well, how do you?
How do you? There's no solution that's just, which is why I say allow freedom of association. Because if you don't allow freedom of association, there's no way you're getting that negative externality reimbursed in any form.
Mm-hmm. Like freedom of association. So how would that operate? How would you... Let's take the U.S. for example. How would you designate white areas?
Suppose you take North Dakota to, let's say from North Dakota to North Carolina, encompassing Utah and whatever, and you say, we are now breakaway states of the U.S. We have our own constitution, and that constitution says... we are a home for white people, for the white Anglo-Saxon, generally Western European descendants. There is some degree of diversity that already existed in that nation as we broke away, but there will be no further. And we have a strict policy of immigration that favors white people. We have a strict constitutional policies that favor white people in indirect ways or direct ways. And most importantly, if you are white, you have the freedom to create private baronies of some kind, private entities that are city-like, and you can decide who makes it into these cities. And you can associate with whoever you want, and we unlock basically the freedom of bigotry, the freedom of choosing, the freedom of denying and of rejecting.
Okay. So I guess similar to how the U.S. operated, I think, in like the mid-1800s, sort of. Or I guess a post-Civil War.
To an extent, yes. Without slavery, without aggression. But basically to have the legal tools basically to live on our own.
Mm-hmm. Within land that you own, right? Or would it be like on a state basis? space.
I'm really a libertarian, so I would want this to be organized in a way where private ownership is the ruling, the main rule for most.
Mm-hmm. Has that been done in recent history?
In recent history, there are some
the past 200 years.
I mean, there are some very small local communities that are like religious sects. You have the Return to the Land project in the Ozarks by our friend who was a guest on this show. His name escapes me, but it was made at very, very small scales. But it was made before, as you say, before this century. It was basically the default state of humanity. And effectively, if you go to Japan, this is what Japan is, right? I don't ask for the white race anything more than what Japan has for Japanese people. If it can happen in Japan, why couldn't it happen anywhere else?
Well, I think the consequences of Japan's policy has been, I don't know if it's directly that policy, it's probably other things as well, but they have pretty catastrophic birth rates.
Who cares? Their island is overpopulated. So they will have birth rates that lower, eventually they will increase. But the Japanese race is not in danger of disappearing right now. Mm-hmm. It's never been.
I guess, are you trying to like maximize personal fulfillment? Fulfillment in this, or are you trying to ensure the survival of?
I think personal fulfillment will absolutely increase the, on average for white people who would live among themselves, and in fact, just the free choice of white people who are constantly paying more to get away from racial neighborhoods is a demonstration that yes, they are more fulfilled. They are looking for this. They want this. That being said, yes, I do have basically a preservation of the race concern that we must address. There is no more space on this planet right now that is officially a home for the people I'm talking about, the people of Western European descent, and we better start talking about building one.
Yeah, I'm interested in how that would work, because like what you're proposing here is it's sort of like you said anarchist. I'm assuming you don't mean it in like the socialist way.
Well, I said libertarian.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, I got the word.
So libertarian in the sense that I want a small government, and the government should be there only to apply the law, and the law should only be there to spare victims of crimes. The law shouldn't be there to redistribute to the poor or whatever.
And it doesn't sound especially radical, I guess.
It wouldn't have been radical in the 18th century, but it's some people want to label it as radical today.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just the biggest issue with libertarian, the issue I see where why it doesn't fully come to fruition is because organized societies with strong central governments will overpower those societies.
Oh yeah, so we're stuck with the parasites, and they're working hard to keep us from doing this. However, a little bit of destabilization coming from geopolitics, a little bit of war, a little bit of breakdown of societies, and people starting to perceive, okay, I don't have an interest anymore in being part of the Canadian ensemble or the US ensemble. And then you start having movements for sovereignty and more local, and then you have a lowering of the federal powers, and there will be opportunities to grab throughout history. No empire lasts forever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just trying to think of how this would. Do you think this is a goal that could ever come to fruition, or do you think this is just kind of an ideal for you?
I think we constantly, we constantly in our lives do decisions that will inscribe themselves into a wider history that we can't fully understand. So, like, suppose someone today was deciding to move to Alaska. They would effectively move to a quasi-fully white society of 95% white, only 5% black. Down the line, in a falling American empire, maybe 50 years down the line, Alaska will be in a position to be an independent nation that drills oil, that's mostly white. And so, yes, the decisions that I do on the everyday, like real estate, like where I will live, where I will not live, they play in this larger history. I say always, I say to my audience, we are in a race war. And if you ignore the front lines of this race war, you'll end up like Jamie White of InfoWars, ganged up on by a band of Mexican, Hispanic car thieves. And we end up losing a white journalist because there's a bunch of Hispanic gangs that are doing their things in Texas. You're always part of the greater history, even if you don't know.
Okay. So I guess if you could change like one thing about Canada, then what would it be? Would it be just curbing immigration?
I would break it. If I could change one thing, I would abolish the federal government. And then you would start having provinces that would become their own nations, and perhaps some of them would gather onto multi-state, multi-province governments. But central power is a big issue, because central power is controlled by the diversity, by the democracy, and it imposes a bar on freedom of association. It imposes all of these civil rights restraints onto the liberty of white people to live with themselves.
But it seems like we always just run into the issue of, no matter how you cut it, a society that is decentralized will lose out to a society that is centralized. The centralized
Absolutely.
Society will conquer it.
But at the same time, societies are not fully centralized to the planetary level. So there must be a mechanism that destroys centralization, or else planet Earth would be under a world government. So we have to hang on to this possibility that everything is a cycle. Nothing always converges toward the same direction forever. And it doesn't matter if you have to wait 100 years or 1,000 years, there will be opportunity for fragmentation. And white people will have to do like Jews have been doing, which is jump onto the historical opportunity to reconcentrate somewhere. The Jews have done it with Israel. We have to do it with something.
And do you think that something should be America?
Something should be what?
America.
There will be lands in America, Central America, that will, like the Bible Belt and all, that will be feasible. Alaska will be very interesting too. I don't know the future, but I know that there will be opportunities there. There will be opportunities in Northern Europe. You know, black people cannot handle the Swedish temperature for 100 years. They will run away at some point, and we'll have an opportunity to take back.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. New Guy Prime says Bible Belt equals Central America. Lol. Yeah, by Central America, I don't mean Central America. I mean the center of the U.S., the center and the north of the U.S. That's what I have in mind.
Like the Midwest, I think they call it.
Yeah, the Midwest. Midwest is the correct term, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, no. I don't know if I have too much else to add, really.
All right. Well, okay, but we'll finish the discussion there. But what were your intent in coming here? You were curious about these things? Are you in disagreement with these things? What's your position as I've laid it out for 50 minutes?
I guess like where it culminated into like wanting to dissolve federal governments, and I'm assuming you said like time comes in cycles, right?
Yes.
I don't know if we have a large enough data pool to extrapolate that. Because like the only really the only other time I can think of like where big societies fell and then went back to a society where like we have a whole bunch of states just doing their own thing was the fall of the Roman Empire. Like we don't
exactly.
It's pretty unprecedented times.
Fall of Roman Empire, fall of the Greek Empire, fall of the Mycenaean Empire. There's the centralized bureaucracies, fall of the Hittites. You can dig through history and fall of the Egyptian Empire, really. You can dig through history and you'll see that central bureaucracies don't last forever. That is certain.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess empires don't last forever.
So Although, where do you stand? Because you sometimes you sound like a Reddit tier leftist trying to criticize what I'm saying, but I'm not sure if you are or if you're just playing devil's advocate. Where do you stand on the question of race?
Well, personally, I think it'd be pretty foolish of me to jump to conclusions on it. I'm not super well versed.
Okay, so you're making your mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess from what I've seen, it seems like centralized societies outperform decentralized ones, and you can argue for the merits of a decentralized society on like an ideological level, but ultimately you're going to lose out to centralized societies. So I think it's just sort of a futile goal.
Okay. Well, I guess someone stuck in the Roman Empire would think exactly this, and eventually everything falls. The fact is, don't forget, from a white perspective, we have our boys in the central society. We have people who may be part of a bureaucracy that bars hatred and bars segregation, but that deep down, the liberal bureaucrat in Ottawa, they know they wouldn't want to live among diversity. They know the consequences of it. So we kind of have our sleeping white agents everywhere, in the jets that we're dropping bombs with, in the army, in the bureaucracy. They're everywhere. And the day the structure of togetherness of a federal power dissolves, all of these interests will come to act in a way that is favorable to us and favorable to these very people who are sleeping cells for now. All right, well, Dinuko, yeah. It was an interesting discussion, and I'm happy that it's public because that you pushed me on many points, and it was very educational. Thanks for your questions, and thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Wow, that was a long convo. A racist aristocrat. Wow, this guy is a little more decided than our friend Dinuko. He sends a super chat on entropy. He says, 1, you posit that species are not crushed accidentally, but what about all the non-bacteria, non-ant species human presence has unintentionally eliminated? Also, why not use a more meaningful category when discussing our existential threat, like white people with a 120 IQ. Then the number is tens of millions as opposed to the meaningless billions of humanity, i.e. a lesser task that great AI show. So for, yeah, it's been very easy to misunderstand my statement when I said an entire branch of life doesn't disappear accidentally. It's important to understand it in context. By not accidentally, I mean truly not accidentally. There has to be a reason. There has to be, their niche must be occupied by something else. You can't basically just, I'm gonna go out to McDonald's tonight. You can't just kill a species in the process of wanting to go to McDonald's and get a Big Mac. You know what I'm saying? You may with your car drive onto an ant hill. You may kill a million ants, but it's very hard to kill all of the ants accidentally. This is what I meant. where you kill all of the ants is where your behavior will have a systematic takeover of the entirety of the ants' niche. So let's say that the ants really need this kind of fruit to survive, or really need that or this, and you take it from them because of your lifestyle, because maybe you need the same fruit, or maybe just you're using, you happen to be using chemical products that just happen to kill all of those fruits. Now, this is not accidental. This is niche takeover. And what I meant by accidental is really, really accidental. Like killing all of the bacteria on Earth by going to McDonald's. You won't. You'll roll over billions and billions of bacteria as your car makes it to McDonald's. You just as you grab the debit card processor, you're going to be handling all sorts of bacteria on your hand, and maybe you'll spray yourself with alcohol. A true genocide. Billions of bacteria just being killed by your little Purell spray. But it's not in this way that you will ever kill the entirety of all bacteria on Earth. That is what I meant. Now, for your second point, why don't I, discussing the existential threat, why don't I talk about white people with a more than 120 IQ? Well, white people with a more than 120 IQ is really the intellectual elite of white people. It's people like me in my category, in, say, the category of my current girlfriend, or people who are very intelligent and they send a super insightful super chat. I don't know that we have to be that restrictive. And first, I've always said I am not a maniac of intelligence. I am not wanting a 120 IQ society. I am fine with the above 120 IQ being a kind of elite position where maybe 1% of the country has this level of IQ, maybe 2-3%. I'm not trying to expand that percentage, because let's not forget, IQ is inversely correlated with the ability to make babies. IQ is negatively selected right now. Being too intelligent leads you down the road, in our society, leads you down the road to careerism, studies, and it leads women down this road in a way that's threatening to civilization. So I'll tell you right away, if you want to limit a white society to 120 IQ, you won't have a white society 100 years down the line, because intelligent people are not fit to survive on their own. They are good to have in a mix of more stupid people who can screw the screw. And so then now you have a high intelligence people to become an engineer, but you need for that engineer to be effective, you need 20, 50, 99, maybe 90 workers who will do his bidding, who will be able to screw the screw and dump the concrete and drive the truck. So no, I will not restrict my care about the continuity of white Europeans to only the intelligent ones. I do think it's good not to be retarded. It's good not to be 60 IQ average society. But 120 IQ is way too high. I'm happy in a 100 IQ white society. That's where I'm happy. I don't need... Maybe we can educate people and try to get them to 105 on average. But I certainly don't want to push them to 120. Blimpy Supervisor says, that's the kind of central control you want. An intelligent person leading grunts. Exactly. Greatest Whitest says, regression to the mean limits the amount of exceptional IQ people that can exist. Most of us will be middling IQ, and that's okay. Exactly. Guy Slupkin says, thanks for caring about us retards. No problem, bro. John Drake says, think of it like this, new guy. The central banks have more say over how fiat money is printed and used today. Max Kaiser has 2 or 3 million Bitcoin, and JF has, say, 10. Max has no more say than JF. Ah, so the democracy inherent to the Bitcoin world. Yeah, that's interesting. Rock and DSL says, hi, JF, I was watching Yan. How is your... what the fuck is this question? I'm deleting this question. You're asking personal question. No. Not allowing this. If you ask this question again, I will ban you forever. End of the line, Joel says, how does Pakistan maintain the facilities needed to keep their nuclear weapons in safe working condition? They are not super intelligent. Well, exactly, which is why the Pakistan nuclear weapon is really a basic nuclear weapon. It is the gunshot type of two masses colliding into one another and therefore reaching the critical mass and creating the explosion, which is, it's decades behind what the current gold standard of nuclear weapons development truly is. So you're asking how does Pakistan do it? Well, first, Pakistan may have helps, because it's always possible to hire an engineer that comes from outside your society, maybe a Russian engineer, and they will have gone through the they will have gone through through the let me what the fuck is wrong with this guy? So if you hire an engineer from another society, they would have gone through a lot of learning, like a Russian engineer that has experience developing working nuclear weapons in Russia will come with massive amounts of knowledge about maybe he got it wrong, maybe he knows about the errors down the line. So you can easily do this. Even poor societies. You know, I remember my father was just a basic solder welder, you know. He was a basic welder in our society. He got hired by Gaddafi, just before Gaddafi got killed and, you know, got hung onto a pickup truck like he's some kind of moose. Gaddafi hired my father to lead a team of engineering in Libya. So my father, who started off as just a basic, you know, out of high school professional welder in Canada, he was the leader of a team in Libya to make this gigantic project, and there were like Arab employees that were incapable of doing any of the engineering, but my father was able to. So all this to say, very poor society, they still have millions of dollars from taxes and oil sales, and they're gonna be able to drag talent from outside, no problem. New Guy Prime says, well, yeah, Pakistan isn't as big as India, but high IQs are everywhere. Exactly. John Drake says, Pakistan tech is Soviet tech, basically. That's my guess. That's absolutely my guess. New Guy Prime says, Epstein, Gaddafi, mon Dieu, JF is fucked now. Yes, perhaps the Alberta Housewives could do a deep dive. A deep dive between JF and the Gaddafi family and how my father was telling me that the project he was working on in Libya was called something in Arab that meant something around the lines of the Great Man's River. And it was the whole idea that Gaddafi will unleash water to his people. And my father had to build these super long pipes that would carry massive amounts of water from one part of the country to the other. And it was the Great Man's River. Now that Gaddafi has been hung by the American powers, I guess that the Great Man's Rivers must not be in operation. But my father made some money with this, you know. But you have to move to the country. You have to live there in blocks of 6 months or sometimes a full year. And you're subject to a lot. You get to experience what it is to be in poor countries. And even as you fly there, there's lots of danger. Because my father was getting harassed. He would go into another country, sometimes just to do a plane jump. And he would stay in those countries for 1 week. But then you get to experience what it is to live for a week in Tunisia. And if you're white, you're going to be targeted with all sorts of scams. They're going to kidnap you. They're going to force you to use your credit card so they can get $1,000 from you. Very dangerous places to be. I would never travel to these shitholes. Because, okay, you went there to, you know, make a very, very good salary. That's fine. But then you lose your liberty on the way because you get kidnapped by these. It's just these. I won't say the full word, but they are sand people, okay? They are retarded sand peoples. And holy shit, I wouldn't want to be there for a second. Bitmine raises $250 million to launch Ethereum corporate treasury. Bitcoin miner Bitmine Immersion Technologies has secured a $250 million private placement to jumpstart its Ether treasury. I'm getting excited about the chance of Ether, of Ethereum. I hope that Ethereum does great, and I hope there's still a massive upside for the next year for Ethereum, because people are starting to talk about hoarding it and staking it. So this will create demand. I hope that we see a price rise. End of the line, Joel says, Odyssey apparently has put in place a new crypto revenue system. Yes, I hope it works great. I might go back to Odyssey at some point, but we have stabilized on Rumble, and I don't like making too many jumps, of platform. Bob Villain was dropped by his agency. Bob Villain came out in the concert and said something about free Palestine and whatever, river to the sea kind of speech. So yeah, the agencies and the artistic domain, they're still very Jewish. So I don't know that you can even be a singer in a big concert and keep your Jewish agency if you are pro-Palestine. And finally, as a last news item, the internet, as it stood in 2013, wasn't this the best days of the internet where we could hang out? The internet is the first white ethnostate. Let me tell you this. The internet is the first white ethnostate. This was the downloads on Steam, where the point is highlighted if at least one Steam user has downloaded a game. Gaming was a white male thing. We were chilling on the internet and encountering Swede people, Swedes, Finnish people. We were encountering Western European people. And now look at this. That's 2013. Very white. Now 2025. The internet has been Brazilified, Africanized, Indianized, Middle Eastern. Holy shit. This is why the internet sucks. it used to be an ethno state, and it's not anymore.